What's up, OTG fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, two special guests, Evan Dial, Mason Chang. What's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I enjoyed basketball all weekend. It doesn't really get much better than that.
Yeah, same here. It was a great weekend.
Ton of great matchups, and we're going to talk about them all today. We're going to touch on every game one. But before we get started, just a reminder, you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and now airing on Dash Radio. But let's get started in Golden State. The Spurs and Warriors matched up in a game one, first of the playoffs. Warriors came out victorious, 113-92. Initial thoughts on this one?
My first thoughts were it was good to see the Warriors try again after like 3 weeks. But it just shows it was very Warriors. They started a lineup they hadn't used all season before, and I'm not sure if any other team could get away with that and still have the result they did. They moved Iggy to point guard, and he was good, 4 assists. Durant was awesome. Draymond Green's defensive intensity was very good. And then on the Spurs side, you just saw the problem they're going to have all series. They're not going to be able to score with the Warriors locked in like this. I thought this series would go six because out of respect to the Spurs and just how pesky their defense can be, but they got Durant and Klay going. So their defense has to be better to give them a chance because I'm not sure they'll be able to score much at all this series because Warriors will just double the heck out of LaMarcus and then just someone like a Patty Mills needs to explode for three to give them a chance.
I think it was kind of questionable that Coach Popovich didn't start big and go the opposite of the Warriors because, like, I remember last year they actually had some success when they went big against the Warriors because they had, you know, like the Warriors can't rebound as well as the Spurs when the Spurs have Aldridge and Gasol on the floor, but instead they decided to go with Kyle Anderson at the power forward and LaMarcus Aldridge at the center, which they've been doing all season. But I think in this situation, like if you can't beat the Warriors, you should probably do the opposite of them and just go like half court defense, bigs, you know, slow down the pace, and that's sort of what they didn't do this time.
Exactly. You mentioned it. You know, they didn't go big. They lost the rebounding battle 57-40. You know, Evan brought up KD. KD was great. I felt like San Antonio had no answer for him, and he constantly kept getting switches onto, like, Patty Mills, and he was just killing it. They were trying to leave him one-on-one, shooting mid-range jump shots over somebody who's, like, 6'3". You know, it's going to be an easy day for him. Also, a big game from JaVale McGee. McGee's impact was felt early, something I didn't expect to say today.
Yeah.
But he also did a great job on LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, he definitely frustrated him early in the game. So, and then you mentioned Klay, too. Klay was lights out, like 27 points on 11 of 13 shooting, 5 of 6 from 3. You know, you can't really get much better than that.
Yeah, the Spurs, they need to find a way to attack McGee, not just through Aldridge post-ups, get him some more pick and rolls. Yep. And I would also consider starting Rudy Gay as well.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because they need scoring so bad. I mean, Green, Murray, and Anderson, that's not a lot of oomph right there.
Rudy Gay's a guy that can kind of get hot. You know what I mean? He has the ability to score some points. He was actually hustling a little bit in that third quarter, diving for some loose balls too. I wouldn't mind seeing more Rudy Gay in this.
Yeah, for sure.
And one thing that like I sort of didn't understand about the Spurs gameplay or like game plan was they used Danny Green to defend KD, which I don't like. You know, obviously, like it seems on paper like that should be a good matchup, but Kyle Anderson this year has been by far their best wing defender, and he's the guy that, you know, like they trust with guarding LeBron, but instead they started Danny Green on KD rather than Kyle Anderson, and that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I think also it was Kyle Anderson just had a weird game. Like, he didn't have much of an impact. He only played 11 minutes. And I think the whole thing with KD is like, yeah, Kyle Anderson probably would have maybe done a little bit better. But I think, like, overall, they have to change their game plan.
Yeah, he needs more than 11 minutes for sure. I think Pop was too quick with the hook there.
But moving on from the Spurs and Warriors, you know, sadly, you know, no disrespect to Pop, this one might end in 4, possibly 5 if they're able to, you know, get a splash from somebody like you mentioned, Evan. Maybe Patty Mills gets hot, hits 8 threes or something. But let's talk Wizards and Raptors. This was a good game. You know, this is a matchup we've seen before. The Raptors won game one. They broke their curse, 114-106. Thoughts on this one off the bat?
Well, thank goodness Toronto won and just got the monkey off the back. I mean, it must feel like two wins for them. There were some points where it looked like go either way and it was tight, but they pulled through. And unsung heroes, I thought, was the rookie Inoue was huge on both ends, played great defense and got a lot of, just tough buckets, hit a couple threes. And then Ibaka, 23-12, and teams are going to dare him to shoot all playoffs, and he made three threes. And that was huge, really, because Lowry until the end was struggling, so was DeRozan. And then I liked the late move of putting Lucas, I always trouble saying his last name, Nogueira.
You got it.
And was that close? Okay.
Yeah, I thought
I
that
think
was
that's the
good.
first time I got it. All right, but I thought he was really good and gave him some nice energy. It was only 9 minutes, but like Poeltl was kind of struggling and the rap there was kind of teetering, and I thought he came in and gave him a spark. And then just for the Wizards, they were good, and like there was hard to point to too many wrong. I thought they were mostly good, but they got to get more out of the Santoransky Oubre duo off the bench. I thought that was the biggest problem for them.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Thomas Adoransky and Kelly Oubre Jr. needing to put in more effort. But like I think a lot of that was also because Satoransky is a low usage point guard. So he's good in I guess like he doesn't want that big of an impact, like to handle the ball all the time. But when he does, he's effective. But the thing is like when you give him 12 minutes, it's not enough time for him to like build up I guess like a rhythm with everyone on the court, especially since like for like the last couple weeks before John Wall came back, he was a starter. So he was playing with, Otto Porter Jr., Bradley Beal, and Gortat, and they were really effective. So I think John Wall coming back into the starting lineup actually might have ruined or might have messed up the chemistry a bit. And on top of that, like there's that earlier thing about John Wall and Marcin Gortat getting into that beef. And I think that chemistry-wise might have something to do like that might have affected their chemistry this game. But I think Toronto, I mean all the criticisms that Toronto had, they fixed not by because like the criticism before was Lowry and DeRozan can't score or don't do well in the postseason because they isolate a lot and their games aren't just like they're not good enough to win in the postseason. And they fixed that by getting guys like Serge Ibaka, getting guys like Valanciunas finally healthy again and like OG Anunoby and all these other guys that are like picking them up when DeRozan and Lowry aren't doing well, and it shows like that's the reason why they're the number one seed. That's the reason why I think they're gonna win this series. But like going back to like the Wizards, like I think they just need to work out their problems if they ever want to win another game against the Raptors.
Yeah, I think, looking at the Raptors side first, Lowry and DeRozan did struggle in the first half, and it kind of made you nervous. Like, I felt nervous for them. I'm not even a Raptors fan. But then the other guys stepped up. You guys mentioned, Anobi, Ibaka. Also, CJ Miles and Delon Wright combined for 30 points off the bench. I thought that was huge. They had some nice energy as well. And just getting that win is going to be big for them. And then moving to the Wizards side, you guys mentioned it. Like, also, Otto Porter, I think, only had 7 shots, 9 points. He's a guy I think you need to get more involved, especially if some of the other guys are struggling and they're giving so much attention to Bradley Beal. It felt like the Raptors were really trying to force the ball out of his hands. Also, John Wall, you mentioned with Satoransky, like, messing up the chemistry. Coming back this late in the season is really hard. And Wall definitely looked rusty. I know, I want to say he probably missed at least 5 layups.
Yeah. And going back to like the Otto Porter Jr. point that you made, why did they give Marcus Morris 4 shots from three and 15 shots when Otto Porter Jr. only got seven?
I will say Morris and Mike Scott played good games and they both shot pretty efficiently, but I agree. Porter has you have to find a way to get him more shots, and maybe that's taking some away from Wall, who shot 20 shots and only hit 6 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, too much for Wall. And I think, well, a problem I have with Scott Brooks for a while is they need to experiment a little more with the lineups. I would like to see Satoransky with Wall and Beal
Yes.
a little bit more. I don't know why they don't use that more. And then Oubre, even though he played well, he should play more than 16 minutes too. He can help them in this series a lot. And
Yeah,
let's have
especially if
Morris at
JV
center a
is
little
only
more.
playing 23.
Exactly. But that's been a constant with Scott Brooks, so I don't know if that'll change.
Yeah, it's tough to see with Washington. They definitely showed in the series that they could compete. I mean, it was right down to the wire. They almost made another run late in the fourth to kind of really get it close. But We'll see what happens in the rest of the series. Moving on to the next Eastern Conference series, Miami Heat, Philadelphia 76ers. Sixers got the win, 130-103. What are your thoughts on this?
The Sixers are ridiculous. I mean, they're so loaded. It's unreal. Miami was good in the first half, played good defense. Kelly Olynyk was hot. But the Sixers just now have so many shooters that could get hot. Dario got hot, Ilyasova, Bellinelli. And it just puts so much pressure on a defense, even without a bead. And obviously Simmons will find all those shooters. And they're such a good defensive team at well, and Miami's going to struggle to score during this series. I mean, I thought this would be a tougher series. I had Sixers in six, but now, I mean, they got contributions. Even Amir Johnson was big, and he had like 7 rebounds. And also for Miami, I think Whiteside just has a foot out the door.
It doesn't look good.
Doesn't care at all, and he needed to be big. Maybe when Embiid comes back, they'll actually light a fire for Whiteside, but he was like horrendously bad. And he's got to give them something for them to have a chance.
Like, I wrote the preview for the 76ers for the playoffs for OTG earlier. And, like, I mentioned, like, this team is, since the All-Star break, this is the best team in basketball. They have the highest pace. They have, like, the second best defensive rating. They have the best net differential. And it's just, it's insane. And one of the primary, like, reasons for that is Ben Simmons is actually like leading the team in leading this incredible offense, pushing the pace, you know, doing all these things. But on top of that, you have guys like Robert Covington, who's, I want to say, and this might be a controversial statement for some people, he's the best 3-and-D guy in the NBA right now. Like, I don't think anyone is better than him. Then you have Dario Saric, you know, putting up 20 points for them. Like, this is ridiculous. I don't think Miami has enough firepower, like you said, to keep up. I did like the thing that Spoelstra did, when he put in Kelly Olynyk, because Olynyk can score, but defensively Olynyk isn't that good. But the thing is, if you put in Whiteside can't really defend, you know, the perimeter. Like, he can't defend perimeter guys, and he's only a good rim protector. But at this point, when you're, you know, when you have like Saric as your starting center, or like, I think it was Amir Johnson was technically listed as a center, but the way they played, they put Saric in the, like, as a center. He was drawing the bigs that Miami had to the perimeter. And then if you had Whiteside in there, it was completely, you know, like, Whiteside was basically rendered like useless in that lineup. So I thought it was a great game plan by Brett Brown too, but yeah.
I think the roster is just great for Ben Simmons. Like, I was thinking this, I know it's a little off topic, but I was watching the Bucks game and I was like, you know, imagine if Giannis had to have some of these shooters that, you know, Ben Simmons has in Philadelphia. Not saying they're the same player, but, you know, it was great. And they can just throw out something like you guys kind of mentioned, you know, putting Saric at center, Ersan Ilyasova. They kind of have four guys on the perimeter and then just let Ben Simmons do his thing. And he's just so tough to defend one-on-one in a lot of situations that in Miami doesn't really have an answer. I think Spoelstra might be able to come up with something because they do have a few pieces, but with the bigs, it's really tough, especially Olynyk and Whiteside, like you mentioned, Mason, like having those guys run around the perimeter, bam, they might be able to get away with a little bit more. So I'm really intrigued to see what Spoelstra will do in game two. What do you guys think he's going to come up with?
I would consider starting Bam. Yeah. Even though that probably really hurt Whiteside's feelings.
I can imagine.
Who cares at this point? Cause he's probably going to leave. I would even go super funky and consider James Johnson at center a little bit.
I like
with Olynyk. I mean, they're going to have to get creative because when it's Simmons with four shooters, man, they're in some trouble. So I would throw in, you know, just Josh Richardson, Goran, Tyler Johnson, probably with Olynyk and James Johnson. And that's probably their best five unit or the best hope they have.
Actually, I think they should go with Justice Winslow over Goran Dragic. And, like, my reasoning for that is, like, Goran Dragic was really bothered by Robert Covington. When Robert Covington switched on to Goran Dragic, he was having a terrible day. And, like, Winslow, I mean, he's not as much of a scorer, but in recent weeks, he's found his shot, kind of, at least more than, you know, his rookie year and more than since his rookie year. In the NBA, and like, I think his size, he's not going to be bothered by Robert Covington that much, and he's a low usage, like, they've been using him as a low usage point guard off the bench, and I think it'll be a lot more effective. And on top of that, I think he has definitely more of a chance to guard Ben Simmons than Goran Dragic does. But even though like they usually move James Johnson onto Ben Simmons, I think with the addition of Justice Winslow to the starting lineup, I think it'll help with defense and offense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what they do. I mean, no matter what, guys are going to have to step up. You mentioned Dragic not having a great game. Richardson's going to have to score more. You know, if Whiteside does want to do anything, and even if he wants to get out of town, the minutes he plays, he has to play better, You know, his impact really wasn't felt, and he was clearly the biggest player on the floor, like 99% of the time he was on the floor. So we'll see what happens in the next game in this series. But maybe the best game of Saturday, the Pelicans and Blazers. The Pels pulled this one off, 97-95. What'd you guys think about this one?
This was awesome. Drew Holiday made his all-defense case. He
solidified it.
Unreal. And, I mean, that block he had at the end of the game, his defense on Lillard. Lillard shot very poorly, I think like 6 for 23 or something. Plus, Holiday had a very good offensive game with 21 on 50% shooting. Just showed how good he was. And then Anthony Davis was just unreal. And the Blazers – I have a real problem because they put Nurkic on him and Davis will feast on that. But they could put Aminu, but then Nurkic will have to run around a bunch of screens chasing Mirotic. So they're kind of in a dilemma right now, and I wonder if they may have to change their starting lineup. And then for the Blazers, I can't – they're really missing Mo Harkless because Evan Turner just stinks.
He took too many shots too.
Yeah, I'm done with Evan Turner. He was rough. And then I thought it was weird they put in Wade Baldwin before Napier at
first. Yeah, that was strange.
That was very strange for me. I don't think that'll happen again. Either way, I still think this will be a very competitive series throughout. I don't think the guards of the Blazers will shoot as poorly again. But for the Pelicans, this was a very impressive, especially defensive effort.
Yeah, I agree. I thought like the biggest thing in the series, or the biggest difference in the series, was I want to clarify. I thought Portland was going to win. It is going to win the series. I thought before the series started.
I picked them too.
Yeah,
me too.
But I thought the biggest thing that would cause Portland to win is the lack of a small forward in New Orleans, because Etuan Moore is, I think, 6'3", 6'4", and there's no way that he would, you know, be a positive. He would have a positive impact on the game, because like he's just going to be outmatched by every single small forward out there. But and it looked like at the beginning of the game, Evan Turner was the only guy keeping Portland in the game, because Lillard and McCollum were 1 of 15 in the first half, I believe, and they only had 3 points between the both of them. Portland needs to find a way to take advantage of that weakness that New Orleans has, and if they don't, then they're just going to lose the series. And on top of – but, like, you know, obviously, like, the game was really close with Lillard and McCollum shooting that poorly. But, like, Rondo and Holiday are great defenders. So I think, like, their offensive struggles might actually continue through most of the series.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the game plan. You know, they really made it tough for Dame to start that game. It really took him out of rhythm. Same thing with CJ. They definitely switched up Holiday on, like, all – you know, he was on Dame at times, on CJ at times. He also started the game on Evan Turner, too, a little bit, kind of hiding Etuan Moore so we didn't have to worry about getting bodied in the post as much. But, you know, Mirotic had a pretty good impact. Even though he didn't shoot great, just the fact, like Evan mentioned, running around the perimeter, being a guy that kind of forces them to change. And then Anthony Davis was Anthony Davis. 35 points and 14 rebounds seems like a regular game for him. So,
yeah.
Portland, I think Dame just has, they have to find a way to free him up. You know, they sent a lot of attack his way. CJ probably isn't going to shoot that bad. I want to say he really didn't start making shots until the fourth quarter. So if they kind of do something with that, and like Evan mentioned, if Mo Harkless can come back, that would be huge for them. Do you guys have any update on his injury? I know it was a possibility he could be back, you know, in the middle of the series or maybe a little earlier.
Yeah, I saw game 3 or 4, hopefully, but not sure. In the meantime, I think they may just consider going small, little port, and just play Napier, Lillard, and McCollum together.
Yeah.
Try to spread New Orleans out a little more. I think that may be the best move.
And that makes sense, because now, like, CJ McCollum is going to play small forward against Etuan Moore. So, like, that matchup is going to go on, like, definitely towards the Pelican or the Trailblazers side.
Yeah. It's definitely, there'll be some adjustments. I think this series, even though, you know, it looked good for the Pels in game 1, I still think this one probably is going to go 7. Moving on till Sunday, Now, a big game to start Sunday. Bucks and Celtics. Celtics pulled off the W, 113-107 in overtime. We saw some huge threes. What do you guys think about this?
It was wild. I was in Boston and went to the game. Yeah, one of the craziest games I've ever seen live. And the Middleton three, I still can't believe he got that off. But I think what you're just seeing is a team with far more talent in the Bucks versus a team that's just way more disciplined and well-coached in the Celtics. For the Bucks, it was a two-man. Middleton was fantastic. Giannis was really good, but they waited too long to unleash Giannis at center. The Jabari minutes were horrible. His defense, as we talked a little before, was awful, and he wasn't giving them much an offense to counter it. And maybe, like, the only move to play him is when Semi plays, because that may be the only guy he can guard, honestly. And then Tony Snell, I would consider benching and just start Brogdon with Middleton together in a two-guard backcourt, because they have to make some lineups, because the bench from Milwaukee was just really bad. And then on the Boston side, Horford was a stud. He played some really good – even though Giannis had huge numbers, Horford played some great defense on him. Terry Rozier obviously hit huge shots in the fourth. Morris brought the offense back to life when it was really struggling there in the second and third. And then Brown, Tatum, all good. They hit some huge threes. And that's really the key for Boston's offense. They just – got to protect the ball and hit their threes, because they're going to have a few scoring droughts. But Milwaukee gives up a lot of threes, and that's Boston's strength as well. I had Boston in six in this series, and I still think it'll be that way, but it should be very close throughout.
Yeah, I agree. The Bucks. I mean, this is Joe Prunty might have been an assistant under Popovich for a while, but I think it clearly shows that he doesn't have it in him to be a head coach. Like, I think this entire season, it's been Giannis's team, and Giannis, you know, he's not old enough to, I guess, like, I don't want to criticize him for saying, like, he's not old enough to know how to play defense, because he's a great defender, but I think he's not old enough to, like, be the de facto leader slash coach on the team like LeBron James is. I think he'll eventually get to that point, hopefully, but yeah, it's just, like, it's talent versus coaching. And coaching obviously won this time.
Yeah, coaching was huge, and I think fit was huge. You know, like I mentioned, Giannis, if he had a couple more shooters, it would have been easier for him. They were able to really collapse the paint, and he had nowhere to really kick it to a few times. Like Evan mentioned, Al Horford did a nice job. Also, I like that Al Horford attacked Giannis a little bit on the other end when he was defending him. Just made him work, kept him busy. But I agree. I was so happy to see Giannis at the five, and I think it didn't happen until like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter or something like that. So maybe they start doing that a little bit sooner. That could be a big factor in the game. But on the Bucks side, maybe Malcolm Brogdon played a good amount of minutes, but maybe you just play him even more minutes because, like you guys mentioned, Snell just wasn't good. It's just like there aren't a ton of pieces on this team. It felt like Jason Terry played better than Tony Snell in this game.
Yeah.
Offensively, at least.
Yeah, I guess like I wanted to mention like a thought I had earlier this season that like I guess is now coming to fruition. I think Eric Bledsoe is sort of he's a good player. He's a great player individually, but I think he doesn't fit well in this team. And I think when it was Brogdon and Giannis, the floor was more space because Brogdon is more of a threat from three, and he's been more of a threat from three in his young career than Eric Bledsoe has in his entire career so far. And because of that, like there's more floor spacing when Brogdon's playing with Giannis than when Bledsoe plays with Giannis. And yes, Bledsoe is a great in one-on-one defender, but he's also 6'1" while
he also got cooked by Terry Rozier.
Yeah, and I hated the fact that he didn't contest that shot afterwards. Like, I understand, like, you just got embarrassed, but still, like, put in the effort to contest that shot because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know? So, like, I don't know. It was kind of frustrating. Like, I think, like, watching the Bucks this entire season, mostly because I had Giannis as my first pick overall in my fantasy draft, in my fantasy league, like, it was frustrating watching Bledsoe on the court with Giannis. Mostly because Giannis wasn't getting the touches that I thought he deserved for me to, you know, get the number one seed. But, yeah, that's an entirely different point.
Well, another idea would be also playing Brogdon a little bit more with Giannis, having Bledsoe come on the floor maybe when you rest Giannis a little bit more. That way he can kind of take over and run the show because he can still score on some guys. He can still do some good things, but he's better with the ball. And obviously he's not going to get the ball when Giannis is on the floor.
Yeah.
But maybe the biggest surprise of the weekend was the Pacers coming out and pretty much dominating the Cavs in game one, 98-80. I know my regular co-host, Corey Waldron, huge Pacer fan, was probably hyped about this one. What'd you guys think?
Well, before the theory series, I thought this would be tougher than people thought for the Cavs because people didn't realize how good the Pacers are. I had the Cavs in six. I'm definitely shocked that the Pacers won in a blowout fashion, but I think it just shows how good Victor Oladipo is just on both ends of the court. Offensively, he's great, and in defense, he was just up in everybody he guarded. And then for the Cavs, I mean, this is the weakest LeBron team since probably his first stint in Cleveland, and I still don't know why they're starting Jeff Green. And they got to get more out of Kevin Love, mainly. They just need someone else to get some more. I mean, this is one of the best offensive teams in the league, and the fact that they only had 80 points is very shocking. I doubt they shoot that bad two in a row, but they got to mix it up a little bit, give Love some more touches. And then, honestly, I would maybe just consider, even though Nance doesn't give the spacing, he's just been so good for them. I may move Love back to the four, move it and Nance to start instead of Green. But besides, and Korver, I would give some more minutes too, but they just need to shoot better, and LeBron needs to go even more ham than usual because the Pacers are that good.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I also want to point out, like, this Pacers team might be more talented overall than the Cavs, and on paper, I think they should, because, like, obviously the Cavs have LeBron and Kevin Love, which are two, I think Kevin Love can be a Hall of Famer. I think LeBron is, without question, a Hall of Famer. Yeah. So,
we could all agree on that.
That being said, like, the Pacers, they have a lot of young talent in Miles Turner, who's one of the best outside shooting big men in the league. They have Bogdanovich, and Bogdanovich has grown defensively since he was with the Nets. So, like, he's a lot better of a defender, and you can actually play him starting minutes. Thaddeus Young is a very underrated defender this season, because you don't hear about anyone talking about how Thaddeus Young's defense is. And Darren Collison, underrated point guard. Victor Oladipo, he's most improved player of the year without question this year, at least in my opinion. And then on top of that, off the bench, you have Domantas Sabonis, who, when he replaces Turner in the starting lineup, he's another 15 to 20 point scorer a game. And when you look at the Cavs, like, other than Love and James, like, Rodney Hood is inconsistent. He's been inconsistent. That's why the Jazz got rid of him. George Hill is coming back from injury, and he's a lot older than his glory years, in Indiana. And even last year on the Jazz, like, he looks like a different player this year. Larry Nance Jr. is a bright spot. I think that they should play him at the five, because, like, even Kevin Love admits that he doesn't like playing the four. So might as well, like, put Kevin Love at the five, have him space the floor for LeBron, and have, while having Larry Nance in near the middle. But yeah, I think the Pacers are better, but I don't want to bet against LeBron. Like, it's hard to bet against LeBron, especially since he's played 15 years already, and he's proven all 15 years that he can drag a team through sheer will to the finals. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with what you guys had to say. One thing Evan said that makes 100% sense is the Cavs aren't going to shoot 8 of 34 from three again. Shot really bad from three. They missed a lot of open threes. That alone could have made the game a lot closer, especially at the end where the Cavs kind of gave up. Also, J.R. Smith got hot in the second half. If he's able to get hot in any stretch, that'll be big for the Cavs. You mentioned Jeff Green, 0-7. I think his on-off numbers were terrible. You have to find a way to get Kevin Love more shots, too. Eight shots for him. It's putting way too much pressure on the rest of the team. And from the Pacer side, you mentioned it, Victor Oladipo was a beast. Miles Turner still only had 9 shots. I would like him to get a few more shots as well. Also see him be a little bit more aggressive, because I've mentioned this on the preview pod. They don't really have anybody on Cleveland that can mess with him inside in terms of length. Nance, Love, not very tall, not very lanky, not going to really get up there with him. Lance Stephenson did his thing, which is, Lance being Lance. And another thing I like from the Pacers, they're just very active defensively with their hands. I think 12 steals, it just felt like they even stole off LeBron a few times, which is not something you see a ton. So team defense is something that really helped the Pacers in this one.
Yeah. Also, for the Cavs, why did they start Rodney Hood over J.R. Smith. Like, I understand, like, J.R. Smith has had the worst season, but Rodney Hood has been inconsistent this entire season. And I wanted
to think they were hoping for some D, probably. They're probably hoping he could D up Oladipo a little bit, but that obviously didn't work at all.
Yeah, so I think, like, in the future, maybe start J.R. Smith so he can get hot very soon. Or, like, at least, like, start, like, another, like, a more
consistent J.R. because I'd be, like, banking on Ty Lue at this point is just hoping for anything. And, you know, J.R. had that hot second half. You're kind of boosting his confidence by putting him in the starting lineup. Maybe you can beat him up. And we know when J.R. is shooting well, his defense picks up too. So it could be, you know, J.R. could be a big factor for them moving forward in the series and probably the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, I would also consider playing Osman a little bit. I wouldn't be scared to play him. He can actually defend a little bit, and they don't really have an answer for Oladipo. But I guess if you're going, I guess I would if I had to pick between Hood and JR, which I don't like doing, but I would start JR as well because you're right. At least he can get hot offensively, and maybe Hood would function a little better with the bench unit.
Yeah.
Osman too would just give them some nice energy. You know, the Pacers were the hyper team. They were the more aggressive team on both ends of the floor. It looked like the Cavs didn't even really care. I also think LeBron just, like, he tried it a little bit different this game. I felt like he really tried to get his teammates involved to start this one. I think to start this, he really just needs to go ham. And kind of, if they didn't have that terrible first quarter, I believe the Cavs outscored them the rest of the game. So if they were able to kind of have a mediocre first quarter where they don't go down by 20, we might be talking about a different result.
Yeah.
Moving on from there, though, another great game this weekend, Utah Jazz and OKC Thunder. OKC pulled off the W, 116-108. What do we like about this one?
Well, this is my favorite series going in. I picked the Jazz in six, actually.
Oh.
For the Thunder, though, Paul George, playoff P, showed up. I mean, eight playoff threes, P. 36 points. He was just an absolute beast, and he always raises his game in the playoffs. They actually got a decent amount from Melo, which is obviously going to be an X factor for them through the whole series. He had a positive plus minus, 15 points. Westbrook did his thing. They even got some bench contribution. Abrines hit some huge threes, even played some credible defense. Grant Adams was good, banging with Gobert. Gobert actually kind of had a down game for his standards on both ends. The Thunder definitely made him a little bit uncomfortable. But for the Jazz end, the Mitchell injury, I heard his toe is bothering him. That concerns me a little bit because he was really good in this game.
I believe his status is still up in the air for game two.
Yeah.
But obviously, that can change everything. But for them, I would go a little more, some Crowder minutes a little bit more. Alec Burks and garbage time got hot. I wonder if he maybe look worth a shot. And then Joe Ingles needs to be a little bit better. I'd like to try to get him a little more involved. And then Rubio, the playoff concerns are real. He was 0 for 3 from 3, and obviously the Thunder didn't respect his jumper. He's got to hit a few jumpers in the series to keep the Jazz offense afloat.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, well, going, like, back to the Mitchell thing, like, Mitchell isn't he's not concerned at all about this injury. And, like, same with Quinn Snyder. They think they're basically, like, guaranteeing that he'll play game two. But – one thing I want to point out is, like, despite what a lot of people have been saying about Mitchell, he's not – his offense isn't exactly the most important part of this team's offense. I think this team plays better as a team than every – than most teams in the NBA. I don't want to say every other team because there's also the Warriors. But, like, I mean, because, like, they're in their win streak to close out the season – or when they at the end, near the end of the season, Donovan Mitchell had a lot of bad games, but they still won because they got contributions from Rubio, from Gobert, from Favors, from Ingles, from Alec Burks, from Jay Crowder. And unfortunately, the thing is, they didn't show up this game. And Ingles, especially, like, on defense, I mean, he did whatever, like, everything he could to stop Paul George, but Paul George still got hot. I think, like, you know, Derek Favors needs to switch. He needs to contest Paul George's shots a little bit more, which is hard to do because Derek Favors is a big man. He's also a lot slower laterally. So, like, I don't know how effective he will be. But, like, I think the Jazz just need to come up with, like, a better plan defensively, a better scheme defensively to stop Paul George and Russell Westbrook, which is an extremely difficult thing to say. But I think if they – I picked OKC in six. And if the Jazz want to reverse that, then they have to come up with a way to stop the big two in OKC.
Yeah, I think the favors thing is definitely an issue. You're probably going to have to not play him and Gobert together, especially like Evan mentioned. Melo wasn't amazing, but he did have a solid game. He kind of just pulled favors away from the floor. Also, I felt like Corey Brewer had a pretty solid game. What he did is, you know, Mitchell had his 27, 11 to 22. I don't think OKC is going to be terribly upset about that. And he relieved, you know, Paul George defensively so he could have that big game offensively. And Westbrook, you know, he probably missed a few shots that he usually hits, but I think, you know, going this series, it's going to be really tough for Gobert. I mentioned on the preview pod as well, like, they're just going to work him completely. Like, he has to deal with the pick and roll with Westbrook, and then while he's defending the pick and roll, he has to worry about Adams on his back, who literally makes you work every single play. So it's just going to be a long series for the Jazz.
Yeah, it's a tough series for Gobert. I think the Jazz defense will improve in game two. I would be very surprised if the Thunder shot as well as they did in game two. Especially George. So I think it should be a close game. And I would accept a more low-scoring game too.
Yeah, George's numbers kind of, you know, increased everything on the OKC side a little bit more than normal. And he's most likely not going to shoot like that again, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had another big game. It'd be interesting to see. Do you guys think Melo has a big game in this series?
I think statistically he has to. Like, the possibility of that happening is far too high for him not to have a big game, at least one of the, you know, possibly six or seven games.
I could see one game where he hits like six threes or something, but I would be surprised if he had like an old school dominant Melo game.
Yeah. And I think another thing is, like, Adams had a pretty quiet game in terms of scoring. I wouldn't be surprised after the Jazz make some more adjustments. It kind of allows Adams to get open a little bit more as well. Last game of the night, last game of the weekend, last game one to talk about, T-Wolves and Rockets. Rockets won this one 104-101. Closer than most expected in game one.
Yeah, I thought this would be the least competitive series of all of them. I had the Rockets in five, and the Wolves kind of blew an opportunity to steal one. It was a weird game. Derrick Rose had a higher usage rate than Butler and Towns combined, which, if I heard that before and heard they only lost by three, I would just actually be impressed. But yeah, Towns was a no-show. Butler's hand appears to be bothering him. But I was overall, besides Harden, who was just ridiculous and just cooking everyone in ISO, the Wolves played solid defense, and you kind of felt the impact of the losses the Rockets had. Mamute, they could have used. Ryan Anderson shooting. And kind of like Cleveland, a lot of Houston shooters were just off. So I don't attribute that. And Chris Paul also had a down game. I just kind of feel like it was just a weird game. And I expect the Rockets to bounce back, hit more of their threes in game two, and kind of wipe the floor at the Wolves. I think the Wolves blew an opportunity to steal one here.
A lot of the stuff I said during the preview episode of the series came true, and I didn't want that to come true at all. Because, like, I said, like, Chris Paul has sort of looked uncomfortable all season long in D'Antoni's offense because he just, like, tries to isolate. He dances too much, and then he gets a bad shot off. And that happened a lot this game. And, like, the thing is, like, most of the time he would make those mid-range jumpers, even, like, no matter how contested they were. But in this game, they weren't hitting because, you know, he just, like, they regressed to the mean, I guess. And, you know, James Harden, without James Harden, we would have definitely lost. I think Ryan Anderson's the most important player in this series, like from both teams, because when he's in the game, he draws Taj Gibson out to the perimeter, and Taj Gibson is statistically by far the Timberwolves' best post defender. So when you get rid of Taj Gibson, the lane is clear, clearer than it ever will be, and like Ryan Anderson, like if he can just put up a couple threes, then he's already made up for his weakness on defense. So I think I'm waiting for when Ryan Anderson gets back before I make my judgment on the series.
I don't even know if he comes back. I don't think, like Evan mentioned, this is kind of similar to the Cavs. The Rockets shot 10 of 37 from three, and a lot of them were open threes. Just like the guys were cold, I think they'll pick it up. James Harden had a great game. I think if Minnesota wanted to steal a game on the road, this was their shot. I don't think you're going to hold Houston under 110 the rest of the series, most likely, especially with the pace they play. And like you guys mentioned, you know, Jimmy Butler's bothered by injury. Towns wasn't good. Clint Capella had a nice, you know, a nice game too. A lot of oops, just finding the right spots on the floor. He had a couple nice rejections on Towns. it's just like another roster and the Timberwolves that I really am just not a big fan of. Like, it's just they don't really allow some of their best players to excel, and that's going to hurt them in the series. Kind of the same thing that's going to happen to Milwaukee. They have great players in Giannis and the T-Wolves with Karl Anthony Towns and Butler, but some of the pieces just don't all fit together.
Yeah, I thought at the beginning of the season the Timberwolves are probably one of the biggest threats to the Rockets and Warriors and Spurs if quiet, you know, actually played. But like, I thought like it would all just be chemistry.
Thank you everybody for listening. You can catch the show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. We're gonna have a ton of playoff preview pods and a ton of playoff content on OTGBasketball.com.